Episode 340, here we go. We're a bunch of goers, we're a bunch of doers. We're in it to win it. We're locked in. We've got Esports World Cup news. And we have news approved by the most beautifulest, most fairest little customer service department I've ever done seen.
Nice.
And we got other things, like and such as and or how Yiska.
Yeah. You're definitely the kid that everyone thinks about in the meme from, like, how old would he be? Probably like 23.
Now? Yeah, probably.
Right?
Or he just like stammers over himself and just starts crying.
You could do everything. Yeah.
No. It's me. I'm him.
Yeah, no, I can very much empathize. I did a similar intro to that this week on a new format. I hate it. Like I feel
mine was on purpose. I don't know if yours what.
Cope.
Okay.
I think it is it's like I need to warm up, you know, when speaking and when like
sure,
going
yeah.
into the mode of recording, and then it's like sometimes you have to adjust to the conversational style. It's warming up. I'm never stretching in. I'm always, like, I think one of the things that folks, if anything, are always kind of irritated by is like, hello, here's three questions and four side points. Please, you know, respond to it. And then they're like, hello to you too. And I'm like,
yeah.
You gotta be quicker, mate. You gotta be quicker.
Like, we're not here to F around. We're not here to muck about.
Pretty much.
We're here to jump right into things and get you learned. Get you learning. What you been up to though? Before we get into the most excitingest, beautifulest news.
Well, as you can see, I'm still kind of in my running gear. Still haven't had time. The problem is like I kinda need a cool down period also from running. So did a little bit of gaming this week, just like back on the old Dyson Sphere program. Other than that, yeah, just doing the do, you know?
Beautiful.
How about yourself?
Hold on.
Chat, this is an intimate moment. We're alone, okay? Eric is still here, but he's basically a ghost in the walls, okay? So, I'm not sure if I'm going to like leave this in, if I'm being honest with you. Also, if you're wondering why I am currently staring at the camera, the reason is I got a teleprompter. Like a
Did you really?
Elgato one, yeah. I treated myself.
Shoot.
I'm actually not really like I'm browsing, but I'm directly staring to the camera. So that's
you're not using like the NVIDIA I look at the camera tech?
No, I'm not. It's actually an Elgato teleprompter. It's kind of good. I kind of dig it.
Huh. Very cool. I know that's been something you've talked about in the past, but I don't know if you would ever pull the trigger.
No, it's easy enough to use. I'm interested in the efficacy. I haven't done any deliver to camera work, which is the primary reason I got it. Right?
Like, yeah.
When you do intros or whatnot to certain things, I feel like we've acclimated to the tone of, or rather to the custom of people not directly looking at the camera during podcasts. I think that's just like not, it doesn't track as like something that is rude in some way or whatever, right? Like it's pretty much like the mental readjustment that someone, like, if they look in that direction, they are very likely looking into someone else's face, and that's respectable. So, like, I think for podcasts, it's really a minor thing, but I think for deliver to camera work, it will be quite good.
Yeah, it's kind of important. That makes a lot of sense. Like, if you're, you know, it's meant to be, like, to the audience member, you know, not just a conversational thing, then. Yeah, I would imagine you'd want to create a little eye contact. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. All right. Well, we have some group stage stuff going on. We'll get through that as well. Obviously, we have some interesting little tidbits with Blizzard CS kind of kicking off right now. Some discussions around there. I'm not one to really just sit and like debate free speech, but this is a little like that's kind of weird.
A little weird.
I mean, that's just me. Like, I'm not gonna sit and be like, "Oh, this is what you."
I also
kinda
really
can't say.
I also don't think it applies in any way to how people want to, private companies want to moderate their discourse on their respective platforms, right? That's like that aspect is not really an argument for me. I think what is an argument is that it doesn't make for a good customer experience when, you have to switch to. I guess let's talk about this. Are you aware of the linguistic concept of register?
I can't say that I am.
So, registers are actually quite easy to explain. So basically, like, while you speak English, you speak different Englishes, right? Like,
sure,
speak English differently with your doctor than you will speak it with your parents, then you will speak it with your niece, then you will speak it with your superior and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
So, if I have to legitimately put on my work register in order to communicate with folks in online recreational stuff, I might as well be working, right? That's the mode I'm switching to. I don't want to be forced into the register of not having to look after my every word, especially because, you know, mild curse words, profanity, like shit and fuck, is really not an issue, right? Like, it's good tone to use them as, you know, periods in a sentence, right? That's much more frequently the case, even among friends and whatnot. So, I think there's something afoot there. There's probably a reason why that's occurring. I'm also a little annoyed around the discourse in terms of how it's being held, because I don't know that there's any political decision behind it, but yeah. Do you want me to unroll how this went? Because I know you're not that familiar with the subject in general.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with exactly how this all happened. I remember there was like a tweet that somebody was like responding to, and like that's kind of all, that's the gist of what I had caught, but I don't know if that's necessarily up to date or if there's been more developments and more stuff, like, I don't know.
Right, yeah. So in order to get you out from your, I know your rock, which is a Sisyphusian task. Basically, I think it's fair to say that the discourse kicked off with, there was always something bubbling under the surface. Also, people in my Twitter mentions pointed out that this has been a reoccurring issue over the last half a year. So prior to the takeover of Microsoft and also prior to the layoffs, even though I expected to exacerbate the issue. So basically what happened was, there's a collegiate player called Derpy, and he tweeted that he would like to talk to an actual person because he only got automated responses. And eventually, he turned to Twitter and reached out, and customer support basically said that there's, you know, a lot of F word and sh word in there. Now, by the way, I find it pretty reckless to call it F word.
Well, actionable. That could mean a couple different things.
And I guess you would say F slur for the other thing, but yeah, like maybe not everyone would understand that, but
sure.
So basically, of course, there's also, we have to be fair and say that they have an escalation mechanism. So what happened basically is that Derpy was banned from competing in the upcoming collegiate tournament, which starts in May. So that's an extended, or I'm not sure if it's a permanent ban or if it's just because his account is therefore no longer in good standing. That much wasn't disclosed, right? But basically, like that not good standing is now extending so far that he is unable to participate in the collegiate event for shit and fuck. Now, we also have to say, if someone has such an escalated, punishment, there's probably something
right.
happening
there's
prior.
Maybe something more.
Right, like there's yeah. there's an escalating punishment mechanism at work. You start out with like a chat disablement, then like, you know, you might get banned for a day or 72 hours or whatnot. Like, to be banned for a long time or to not have an account in good standing for such a long time, probably something happened prior to this. Still,
right.
the customer support pointed out, among other things, that the sh word and the f word were used. And then in several other replies to other users, they pointed out that no profanity has ever been allowed, which is something that, for instance, Pete pointed out is patently untrue, right? The thing then, like, of course, then the community digs further into statements made by customer support, and it turns out that customer support has said that profanity in any shape or form, be it abbreviations, be it mistypings, be it censoring it, you know, with the little star mm-hmm. or whatever, and just hinting yeah. towards it, all of that is actionable if reported. Okay, so basically, you can report Cassidy is the logical, right? It follows from that because
yeah.
he has the badass motherfucker belt buckle,
yeah,
the BAMF, right?
Yeah.
So also like other characters like Tracer on some skins saying Wenka is another subject that's being brought up. So there's a little bit of a hypocritical stance here. I will say maybe not necessarily, because what Blizzard tries to wash their hands clean with is basically saying you can't say it, you cannot just not be reported for it, right? And I guess in a super sane society, I mean, nobody would be cursing anyway, but like, let's say if the report system worked accurately,
yeah,
then the people playing the game would make the judgment call whether or not the profanity was used in a way that was too far, right? And
yeah,
it's definitely possible to use these words in a way that's too far, if it's too aggressive and whatnot. But some of them are actionable even by, slightly higher standards.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, I have a crackpot theory what's actually going on here, right? So I think this has been an ongoing thing. The communication around maybe a mild policy change, because there's definitely has been a policy change. You definitely were not banned for saying shit and fuck, even if reported 7 years ago, right?
Right.
So I think what might have happened is that they just had a change in how the moderation generally works. And there could be many ways how they do this, right? Like, for instance, maybe the threshold of required reports in order to automate the system to cast a sanction on the account has been lowered, and therefore is a higher frequency of these situations occurring, right? That's a
yeah.
possibility. Because I did not... It's another possibility is that it always has been this way for a while, and it's just becoming a topic now. Definitely possible. It's just strange that the frequency of it would spike, but maybe that's a perception bias on my part, or on the community's part in general. I will also say that it is a weird coincidence that customer support has largely been fired during the layoffs
sure.
in January, right?
Yeah.
So there were 1,900 folks being let go. Famously, a lot of their customer support was let go, like their GM system and whatnot. And that was pointed out during the time by some insiders that was a thing. So it makes some sense to me to say that if you do not have the manpower, or if you're an outside company now coming in, a third-party company, you know, that has to do the review, not the automation, but the review of those, that they will have, that they will act differently. Now, I have no knowledge of that. If there has been indeed a policy change, internal policy change, how things are being interpreted, or if it's just like different folks judging that, or if the threshold is lower, whatever it is, there's a reason for it. And economic pressure seems like a cogent argument to make at this point, right?
Sure.
I think there are good reasons to pursue it, to pursue something about chat. It's possible that like someone that is in charge of customer support, or rather the social experience of Overwatch sees that there's a very low participation rate, for instance, for voice, right? And wants to fix that.
Of course.
I don't think Profanity is one of those ways to make it be the case, right? Like, I agree, and I think there must be a threat from 2016, I think, that I made on our competitor on our Overwatch, actually, saying, like, we have to establish a culture of talking in games, even at the lowest level. And once that culture is entrenched, then hopefully that sustains through it, right? Like, hopefully, like, it just becomes common practice to talk, because it's so important. And also, like, talking to everyone in your lobby just makes Overwatch a much more fun experience. I think that's
definitely
for all shooters, that it's pretty much true. So, unfortunately, I don't know what your experience is, but especially in Europe, under a certain level, there's just no talking whatsoever. And it, like, you will not even get a, like, hello guys back or something, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, I think the last few times that I've played Overwatch, I know that I typically will never participate. Like, I've spent 20 years online and maybe 15 of those, like, actively playing, like, competitive games. There's just nothing good you typically to come from chat on average, and it usually, like, will lend itself more to performance dips. So, like, I'm one of those people who, like, actively does not engage with chat functions. I'm very much of a proponent, like, even in, like, League of Legends, like, just mute everybody, don't join voice chat. Like, it's for the times that it is good, it's really nice. It's just you can't control that. And to be honest, I don't know that, like, Blizzard can either, but maybe that's a different conversation.
I feel like in League, it's much less required in solo queue than...
Overwatch, it's infinitely... CS, 100%. Like, I won't get into, like, the importance of, like, calming in specific games. Because obviously that's different for each game, but it's just not, you know, not something that I can control, and I would rather just, like, invest more of that into, you know, paying more attention to the game, not necessarily getting, you know, tilted out of my mind, or just getting frustrated and wanting to stop playing because I enjoy the game. But that's just me. I know that can be a little bit tricky for people that, you know, do want to improve, and, like, calming is it when you do get it, specifically in Overwatch, and I think in, like, games like CS as well, when you do get people who are, like, actively trying to, like, communicate and work together as a team, and it's not, like, giga toxic, it can be, like, a transformative experience. It really is, like, something super, super cool that you just don't really get elsewhere, I think. And I think it's commendable for game developers to be working towards solutions to try to create more of an opportunity to have a higher, like, density of those games, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think this is the way you go about it. You know, I'm not saying that's what you're saying. That's obviously very clearly not your stance. I think just more clearly drawing out to the listeners that, like, this is really weird. It's, like, very strange to me that, like, as I think as a society, I think we're pretty, like, open to, like, some cussing and, you know, like, ooh, some foul language. It's pretty normal. Obviously, again, like I said, 15 years spent playing online competitive games, you can hear some pretty, like, heinous stuff. And, like, that should be that, you know, there's no reason for, you know, women and people of color and, you know, marginalized genders to be coming out and, like, posting videos of pretty targeted harassment. Like, that's very clearly, like, not okay. Like, you should not have to fear trying to communicate in a video game or just on an online space.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that it's, you know, I think it seems like the threshold for a lot of these reports are a little low, and some of the...
Yeah, it's just not fun.
It's weird.
It's just not fun, right? I think there has... If the lack of interaction chat is actually the problem. And I think, like, in many ways, we have some patchworks, right? Like, the ping system was extended, therefore people do not have to talk as much. I think that's a fair choice. There's also, you cannot fix societal problems in a video game, right? Sometimes you just 100%. Have to assess,
you don't need to be
adjust to that
light again.
Like, we have talked about folks, you know, submitting their linguistic profile and therefore, you know, being shouted down in voice, and that's not great, right? But there's still something to be said about maybe Overwatch is just, like, because it's such a stressful game and what it does to the psychology of everyone involved, because it's so intense, always on, and, like, high input and whatnot, that it's more challenging. I think, if I had to say, I think this developer is just less cool with toxicity in their voice, which is, I mean, you can think about that what you want. I'll tell you, CS is almost unplayable from that angle. But still, like, a willingness to communicate, I think that it would just make it for a better experience if that was possible. And I would even say that, and this might be an unpopular take, that there are emerging tools, especially around artificial intelligence, that may assist in having better moderation and better classification of folks. I'm aware, for instance, of a product that it tries to look at how people interact in games and try to sort of find those moments where, like, the tone sours, right? And where performance goes down. And if you can identify those moments, you can do something about it in game design, if it's caused by game design, or if it's a reliable thing for the particular viewer to engage that way in your video game, then you just get them in a shit queue, right? Like, just put them with the other shitters or directly punish them, right? I think there is something that Overwatch has tried. But once again, it's a self-reporting system that's imperfect with the commendation system, right? So it's really an afterthought that generally does not really impact matchmaking. And maybe there's an idea to be made about being a bit smarter about the moderation, because I'm sympathetic to manpower not being the solution here, because it just... Think of the sheer amount of chat that you have to go through, and, like, even sensibility of on tickets and whatnot. It's very hard to enact a cultural change at this point and make it more fun again, because I think a lot of it has to do with the cultural zeitgeist of the particular game. Like, is it fresh? Like, what's the general mood around the game and whatnot? Like, it sort of transposes itself onto your general experience when playing. But I would hope there are smarter solutions than just outright saying, like, blanket banning profanity and having that be a policy.
That's a little draconian.
Because, I mean, let's be honest, it just makes people weaponize reports, right? Like, as soon as someone drops...
Like, oh, you said something bad, I'm telling mom. Like, it's not really...
This guy didn't...
Using the system correctly.
Didn't pick the hero that I wanted, and he said, oh, shit, I missed the headshot. Well, that's a report, right? Like, just because of out of petty reasons that ultimately shouldn't be bannable, but can be weaponized. So, I think that's almost a more likely scenario for that particular policy to be used, that rather than actual applicable scenarios. So, I think whenever it's just not a way to govern this. I would also hope that there is some nuance for the esport in particular. Like, even if your account is banned, think an admin should be able to access the ticket and potentially judge and make a nuanced call whether or not that person is eligible for compete in these leagues. Because especially I tried to report on this, unfortunately nobody really bit, but false reports are not a small issue in the collegiate scene. Also, because there's sometimes scholarships attached to them, right?
100%, yeah.
So, like, sometimes it is... Wait, let me align this again. It is more serious than just, like, a video game situation, right? So... sometimes there are scholarships on the line. Sometimes there are, even just competitions on the line. And maybe it's undue, right? And that's unfortunately a byproduct of this automated system that hopefully will find some way to be amended with smarter moderation and a more nuanced take. I think it's much more efficacious to try to engineer the culture than to punish bad behavior.
No, 100%. And I think that's kind of like where, like, you, on the tail end of that, I think you get to like where my kind of next question is like, we've seen, I think, a lot of developers lean more into trying to, I don't want to say reward good behavior, but like all of these like commendation ranks, like it's not, you know, lost on me that there is like this big push, like, game, like across the board in gaming, to really have this like almost secondary ladder that you can kind of climb that shows that like, oh, you're like, you're a good teammate. I guess my question to the audience, both and you, is that like properly weighted? Like, is there a proper reward for like being a good teammate and being a good chatter and being a good communicator? Obviously we have like very clear like anti-rewards or punishments. Like, if you are a poop person, if you're just like a little trash bag, you're gonna get banned and all your progress is gonna get deleted and you're gonna get a slap on the wrist. Is there a carrot on a stick for the other behavior, you know?
I'm gonna be honest, I feel like I don't know enough. I feel like there were rewards before. I think the larger issue is not even the incentive structure around behaving well and gaining that rank, but rather how the interaction of commending someone works. It happens in a situation where you're already checked out and very often just like quickly quitting. Like it, only in the most ridiculous of cases will I even consider commending someone.
Like, yeah,
just because they were so nice or kept their cool when others were dickish or something like that, right? Like I wouldn't dream to leave a commendation at that time. I think there's a particular behavior that makes it more likely, but I'm not sure if that particular behavior is generally conducive to actually being a person that facilitates good discourse within the team. I think what needs to happen is a different than self-report system on commending players. I think there, and in if not, then the interface needs to change in some way that as to make it trivial or as to reward the when you interact with commendations, right? Unfortunately, like, it very quickly dips into, like, you know, social credit scores and whatnot. Like, how many stars did he have? Like, we're not judging Uber drivers here, right?
We're playing. Yeah, we're not trying. I think it gets a little like skeevy when we get into like trying to engineer a culture in a game, but when there is such a like big difference from like playing in a five stack of people that are all trying to communicate versus the experience you get typically on like a ranked ladder. And this is like pretty ubiquitous across like video games. So this isn't just like an Overwatch problem. Like the gameplay experience is so much better. Like, it is completely elevated to a degree that you can really kind of fall in love with something, and you always kind of want that back. And I feel like developers have always been trying to chase that. So I understand like where the pressure comes from, where you want to try to cultivate the best community possible. This just ain't it. You know, like, this is, I think we're moving in the wrong direction.
No.
And that's just, I don't know. Obviously, I also feel really kind of gross saying that, like, oh, we should like celebrate people doing well or being like good people. It's like, well, you have to celebrate that. I feel like that's just the standard. And that is true. Like, you shouldn't have to like carrot on a stick people for just being like tolerant or understanding or having any kind of like communication skills. Like, that's not something you should necessarily have to maybe celebrate, but maybe that's the direction that, I don't know, developers need to go.
The thing is, you have to look at game design in some ways, right? Like, there are games where it works relatively well. And maybe it's just in the very fabric of Overwatch where you cannot necessarily change anything because of what it does to the cortisol levels of folks that are playing this game, right? But maybe not. Maybe there's something else underlying, right? Like, if the same experience... There are different mechanisms that it could be, right? It could be filtering for more toxic individuals, for instance, right? Which I doubt.
Sure.
Generally doubt that that's the case in Overwatch's case specifically. It could be the case that it pisses people off more to do badly in Overwatch and that they feel less agency, the outcome of their matches, and feel more at the whims of their opponents. And I feel like the game design has addressed this over the last couple of years, especially with Overwatch 2. It's part of why 5v5 happened. They're good, they addressed it in some way. And I guess they're just like chopping down the lowest hanging fruits here. And I think there are not many more left other than the commendation UI or coming up with, you know, a shit queue like Dota does. And it's not a trivial thing to solve.
Yeah, no, it's not an easy solution. That's for sure.
So, be that as it may, I think the current state of affairs will need addressing. I also, like, beyond the topic, without being too much of a "can I speak to your manager, please" person, I feel like the tone on social media of some of those customer support representatives is just not. It's just unbecoming. It's not professional. Okay. I realize that. It's probably a different emotional situation for someone that has just read the logs, and I'm sure a lot of these people are actual shitheads that will say despicable things, and then the GM looks at this and goes like, "Why are you asking why you're banned, you little wretch? Now I can't even tell the world why it is." Right? I'm sure that there's that energy in those folks as well, but sometimes it just feels a little condescending. Passive aggressive, and I think that can be directed at folks that very like either you put nuts on the table and tell the world what they did and do a ride light smite, right? Yeah. Or you just like professionally say the ban will be upheld, GG, right? Those are your options. Everything else is just an optics L, and it leaves a sour taste in my mouth.
That's fair. I think it is a little odd to have, because I don't feel like that's where I think, circling back to the idea that there was like a policy change or like an attitude change when it came to, you know, customer service. I don't feel like this has been like this in the past, at least not for like Overwatch's neck of the woods.
No, I think that's also something that ZP said, like, it's not been like this for 7 years. It might have been like this for 12 months, but it has not been like this for 7 years. Like, that's a little gaslighty by the customer support service. And it's also a little bit down to the way the code of conduct is written, where you can realistically interpret everything to be offensive or to be an actionable offense under the wishy-washy code of conduct framing, right? Like, one of those guys was called out for, like, too sternly trying to shot call this team is just, like, not okay or something. And it's like, oh, really? Like, that's... Yeah, I don't know. By the way, there are scenarios where that's true. Where, like, if someone just, like, insists to impose their view or their opinion on others, and the four others are actually team playing, and then it's one guy trying to play in-game leader, that can be annoying, right? So still, like, I think the engagement in the subject just is not a great look, and is honestly in many ways more annoying than if the usual use of profanity, I would say.
Yep. It, like you're saying, there is like there's other avenues where the community could be moderated. And I don't think this is necessarily always a resource thing, but it is weird that this is taking the cake when there are definitely other, instances or problems that, could be addressed and aren't getting the spotlight that this is. But I think that's also probably the nature of customer service. It's one of those invisible jobs where you really shouldn't notice it,
Yeah.
One of those weird little instances in culture, but weird little happening in the neck of Overwatch. And before we completely move on, I do want to give a shout out to our Patreon producers or YouTube members. We didn't forget about you, trust me. But when Yiska gets on a tangent, I'm not stopping him. I'm not getting in that way. I've done that one too many times, and boy, it's not a good sight.
It's a trolley problem.
It's a trolley problem. Yeah, a little bit. So episode 340 is brought to you by Refined Bean, Bronze Bob, Boo Howl, Lulshen, Rexane, and Sasquatch, and our YouTube members, IMDRW, Brother Adam L, ICM Jell, Fire Element 6, and AK. Shout out to Sasquatch. I believe that is a relatively new or returning producer.
Mm-hmm.
Love that. Love you out there. In more direct Overwatch esports news, we do have a little bit more information regarding the Esports World Cup.
Correct.
And how teams are necessarily qualifying for that. I think all of the assumptions from, the Dallas winner, from the Face It League standings, everything's kind of like everything at a glossary glance looks correct. I guess before we jump into the feelings around it, how do you know, what was your first take of it?
So there are other stipulations that are not covered by the tweet, mainly that if an Asian team was to win, then they obviously do not get another. So just for the audio listeners, I'm just going to read the follow-up tweet. In case of the Dallas Major, only NA and EMEA teams are eligible for the spots due to Asian teams already being qualified. The top two team has already qualified for EWC. The slot will be transferred to the next NA and EMEA team in the final standings. Now, and I guess for the audio listeners, I should also explain that the first and second, so the finals participants of Dallas, of the first OWCS major, will be directly invited. Then the top four of OWCS Asia, that would be those that participate in the tournaments of it, right? Not Korea, it's all of Asia, all of the participating Asian regions. And then there are, I believe, six slots for Face It, for the league winners, and or the podium, I guess, in NA and EU. We can talk about how that is a little laughable as well. But that's the thing. So, like, we have OWCS and Faceit League invites. Also, keep in mind, Faceit can, of course, not run in Asia because that's WDG's region, right?
Yeah, and they have their own platform, right?
Yes. And then, let me shove it up a little bit. It's also a Faceit Latin America and, crucially, also Oceania. And you also, drum rolls, we're so back, baby. And I think this is a little bit of a foreshadowing as well, if you want to know my honest opinion on this. They will invite a China team. And I would strongly consider this to be the Spark team. And I think they probably, or rather, the Leaf stack that has playing together. I strongly consider that these guys have known this for a while, right?
Probably, yeah.
And then we also get a slot for the region where the Dallas Major winner comes from, okay? So,
okay.
That's also interesting. I'm not 100% if that also includes the caveat in the follow-up tweet. So whether or not this particular slot would also only go to NA and EMEA. I assume it's not the case.
I would imagine Oh, okay. That seems kind of a weird...
And I also am not sure what winning region means, if it's just like major region or sub-region. So are they giving the Dallas Major winning teams... like, are they giving it to Asia, for instance, or to Korea, right? That's, like, how specified it is. I would assume it's Asia. Yeah. It's the major regions. So that's still a couple of question marks. But overall, mm-hmm. it's 16 teams. Now, honestly, the FACEIT League invites, I get it. For those that don't know, FACEIT is an EFG company that is... basically part of the same general pool from the public investment fund. And therefore, EFG, or ESA FACEIT Group, works relatively closely with the Esports World Cup Federation. And therefore, it made sense that the integration here, and you will find that there's actually more slots given to teams from the FACEIT League than from OWCS. Yep. That would be a thing that would be considered for the Esports World Cup, right? They are, of course, pushing their own product in some way.
Yeah, of course.
So that the reason why it is a little bit laughable is because, A, the signups have been mediocre at best.
Okay.
Right? I think you are also aware that they actually...
FACEIT is just megaphoning anybody that will listen or has any kind of connection to a community that is...
Yes.
They're just trying to reach out and grab hold of anybody.
If you played OWCS and your Twitter account is somehow recognizable, or your Discord account, you've probably been messaged. Like, I saw Diamond Stacks getting like, "What? Are you planning to play FACEIT League? If so, why not?" Like, you know, all these customer questions.
Yeah,
and I think the sign up I didn't actually look, but it was relatively low. By relatively low, I meant like last time I looked, it was like 21. Right?
Oh wow!
So
that's like
it's
shocking.
Nothing, wow. Right? And yeah. There are several reasons as to why that's the case. It's behind a paywall for one. Like every member has to pay an entry fee or like a subscription service to FACEIT. That then they justify it by saying like it goes back into the price pool, which is fair enough. Also, once again, I'm not at all against monetizing esports players or viewers in some way, right? Like that's fine with me. But it's the needs in Overwatch has just not been created to the degree that it was in ECA, for instance, in the North American region back in the day, or in FACEIT, indeed, in Europe, right?
Sure.
So for those unaware, these ECA and FACEIT services in Counter-Strike are primarily used because they have a better anti-cheat and they have a better moderation about the cheating problem. So whenever like your ranked ladder becomes too cumbersome and there's too many cheaters because you're too high up and you're just getting annoyed with it, you probably are much more willing to buckle up and pay a little bit for the access to, you know, a better client, better service, and a cheating solution than you would ever do in Overwatch. Unfortunately, the problem for Overwatch is that its rand experience is too good, right? I would say. Someone brought something up. I'm not sure if they would mind me bringing that up, but I'm just not going to sell it as my own idea. But honestly, like the best way you could probably promote FACEIT League is to develop cheats for Overwatch, right? Like it's unfortunately the case how these things work. So the fact that if it is really under 30 competitors, I strongly expect that we will see the usual suspects, a lot of the top 16 indeed, in both regions from the respective Western regions.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore it's less exciting. And you would also, you know, the crossover of those teams from NA and EMEA that will make it to the Dallas Major and actually have a chance to win it all, it's probably pretty high overlap with those that will do well in the FACEIT League, right?
Yeah.
There's honestly like three good teams in A and EMEA, I guess they call it.
EMEA.
So we're here, right? Like, it's unfortunately the reality of competitive Overwatch at this point, and the stratification of team skill is just so heavy that this is a very likely outcome at this stage. One, because I think eventually will become better because skill decay will grab, but for now, yeah, this is what it is, and unfortunately, there's really no way out, and it will degrade competition a little bit for sure.
100%. And I think on the topic of the Faceit League in general, am I still under my rock when I say that it's like the most like forgotten about aspect of like the new format that we have?
The Faceit League itself?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think not many people, like OWCS already has not a great PR.
Exactly.
Yeah. Faceit probably is even further out. And even if a lot of people know about Faceit, I expect the pay hurdle to actually be pretty substantial, right? Like, it's unfortunately the case that it takes a relatively high amount of dedication to competitive Overwatch to get five people on your team to all pay $6 or whatever it is for a season. So, unfortunately, that's currently the state of affairs. And as long as Overwatch, the game proper, does not point people towards the esports ecosystem, it's unfortunately also not going to meaningfully accrue more signups. I think for all intents and purposes, the signups for OWCS were pretty solid. They went down, yeah, I think, 20% by stage two. That's fine. That was expected.
Typical, yeah.
But the signup numbers were still relatively healthy. So I think Uncoachable talked about it being a PR issue, and or rather Chris who said that for now they believe it's a PR issue, but like if it's proven otherwise, then we have different problems of, you know, not having a demand.
And this
for it.
Is this for WCS that they were referring to, or is this for Faceit?
Faceit.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, what is it, a PR issue? Yeah, it's an issue that like nobody might not even realize it's like a thing. Like, is the average player, is the diamond stack that you're referring to, like, are they actively like, oh yeah, we could play in the Faceit League? Like, is it more of a barrier entry? Is more of the problem the barrier to entry of like the payment and the subscription? Like, is there a
all good questions?
Yeah,
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, like, is it because there's not a broadcast for that either, right? Like,
yeah,
there. What value are you like really getting other than like a competition, right? Like, I think it's pretty clear that like we have not developed a strong community of like competitors. Like, this is not the community that like loves to like challenge themselves and like compete. Like, this is more of like, we liked our skins and I'll see you next season. You know, like it's. We've not done a good job of cultivating a competitive audience that is trying to, you know,
yeah,
hone their steel, if you will, right? Like, that's just not what this has been for a long time. So yeah, that
yeah,
something's got to change there for sure if they want to keep that supported.
There's also a second issue that sort of arose from, I'm not sure if you followed this.
Probably
but
not.
The Esports World Cup also announced its total prize pool, right?
And yes, I did hear about this.
The total prize pool is 60 million, which is, of course, like a ridiculous number. It's the largest prize pool. Even though I struggle to say it's fair, like to compare it to TI. TI is one game, you know? Like,
sure, yeah.
So TI was 40 million, Gamers 8 was 45. This is 60 now, right? And in it is included the prize pool of 20 million for the clubs, and then 30 million for all titles. Now, keep in mind, we have 19 titles at this event, right?
Yeah.
So, quick maths, we're at like 1.55 million per title on average. Now, there is publicly, we already know that two of those esports had $3 million prize pools. PUBG Mobile, I think, is one of them.
Yep.
And we know that for last year, for Game of Eight, Dota 2 had a ridiculously large prize pool. And it's probably expected that, including the qualifier, they're probably scraping at 10 million again. Right? That all drives the average down. So, yes, there comes some caveat games in there. I think it stands to reason that maybe solo games will be gaining less. It stands to reason that other smaller esports titles that are participating will not be gaining or having as high prize pool. But still, overall, you kind of have to consider that Overwatch might be under the 1.55. Now, you might be saying, oh, Jeska, well, that's amazing, right? Like 1.55 for Overwatch? Have you looked at the clock? Yes, but unfortunately, I think a lot of folks thought it was more. And also, the discourse around it is pissing me off a little bit, as if these folks were, like, you know, reckless in their negotiation. I agree there's some wishful thinking in there, which you had to have in order to continue doing this.
Yeah, but, of course.
Like, I think there's, like, through the grapevine, there were several numbers that were always, like, bouncing around behind the scenes, and they were definitely higher than 1.55 million for Overwatch. And it seemed to me that interested teams were facilitating that. Now, keep in mind, a lot of those teams already are in pre-agreed established business relationships with the Esports World Cup Federation. They are all NDA'd up, so, like, they are the people in the know, and they communicate that they are in the know, or, like, hint a little bit. You know, we know, like, oh, yeah, Overwatch, blah, blah, blah. And if that's part of your negotiation, and you intimate or hint towards what the prize pool might be, that will give an indication to the players or coaches also where they want to put their priorities, right? And one major part of these negotiations for your contracts, of course, is always the prize pool share against your regular season salary, right? So some folks prioritized having a higher prize pool share. Let's say 90-10 or something, there were offers on the table for 50-50, right? It's a basic calculation. Like, you can judge what you're realistically going to get. You can estimate what that would net of the total prize pool. You can slot in the prize pool itself. You can look at your prize pool cut. You can do all the estimations, how all of that would break down, and make a reasonable, you know, within one standard deviation. Guesstimation where you will land and come up with a suggestion where you want your securities to lie. Do you want a higher prize pool share, or do you want a higher base salary? And based on that, you're picking and choosing offers. Now, if the prize pool is much lower than some of these organizations maybe implicitly communicated, that might feel bad for some of those for some of those competitors, right? Now, I will also say, and please treat this with the greatest of cautions. It's possible that we already know more by the time that this episode is official, but there appeared some German sites had more clear definitions as to what titles are getting what kind of prize pool, right? The graphic looked relatively believable. It was only disseminated across German-speaking parts of the community. It just, like, knowing, you know, journalism, it feels like one PR guy fucked up and it sort of disseminated that way.
Okay.
But it was also taken down by some reputable German magazines, right? So that all of that leads me to believe that either it's false information or it's credible, but it's too early. It's an asset embargo that shouldn't have. And I can tell you, and I don't want to spread misinformation, but I can tell you it was lower than 1.55 million, the Overwatch prize pool, right?
Huh?
So now we're looking at a rate where, like the rumors were twice at least of 1.55.
Oh, 100%.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and you can argue that's a wild assumption for a game like Overwatch. But then again, it's a first time event. And there's also reason to believe that they could be buttering that much in. The other thing is, like, would Blizzard even allow that to have a price pool this high and devalue their own product in the process? Because they're not going to reach remotely the same heights, right? And therefore, de facto, EWC. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, for instance, other leagues were already handicapped in their price pool in comparison, right?
I could understand. I think that, like, if Blizzard is waving around a big stick like that still, run very far, get away, dodge, avoid, your evade button.
Do you mean leave the scene? Or
I'm not saying like leave the scene. I'm saying like that is not a good sign that they're cutting their nose off in spite of their face, like yet again, that they're like overly trying to helicopter parent whatever Overwatch both is and potentially could be. I think there's definitely a non-zero chance that Overwatch can like grow into something that's like semi-sustainable and like is okay, and it's like a tier 3 esport and maybe even gets into the tier 2 scene. Great, love that, awesome. I think the only way that that can happen is if Blizzard really makes it a fertile open ground to have third-party tournaments kind of come in and do what they won't. And at this point, I think it's pretty safe to say that they won't, because this is, I think the reason why I feel so confident in saying that they, like, so definitive in that statement, is that this is the year to really kind of not put up or shut up, but this is the year to like really start off this new system of Overwatch esports, and like the investment from Blizzard side is understandably pretty low.
Yes.
Why is it understandably pretty low? Because they've had to pay out the Overwatch League settlements, all that stuff. You know, they just had a bunch of money just burned at the stake for their project, right? We get it. I get it. I don't think it's fair or even smart to then, and I'm not saying that this is happening, but if that is the case, and they are running around with a big stick and just like trying to police what other third-party tournaments, and I'm going to completely just speak unbiased, you know, everybody can think what they want. I have my personal views on, you know, what's going on with the Esports World Cup. I'm not gigantically a huge fan, TLDR. Think what you want. But I don't think it's right or fair or smart for Blizzard to be running around and being like, oh, you can't, but you're going to devalue our product. And it's like, you tried and failed. I'm sorry. This is not up for debate. You gave it your best shot and it was fun while it lasted. You don't get to run around and still police anybody anymore. And if they are, I think that's very dangerous for the overall like health of the community, or the like, you know, not actually dangerous when it comes to like litigation or anything, but like that's not a good sign. That's not bolstering confidence, let's say, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not a good look if that's happening. I don't think either of us, maybe you would know, I definitely don't know. I watch games and talk about them. I really don't particularly care to get into like the industry politics of things, but I'd be lying if I said, man, I hope they aren't doing this. It's definitely been a thought that's like crossed my mind, you know what I mean? Like, boy, I hope Blizzard has learned, because this would be the time to get it right. I don't think it would be such a detriment to the wider like TO landscape to hear that like, oh yeah, Blizzard's like back at it again, like kind of limiting people, like it doesn't matter like who you are, like you can only have so much. It's like, eh. I don't know, is that crazy to say?
No, like I, sorry, I'm also a little distracted because that's good news. I can give that to Eric. Just don't show the thing I'm posting you on. Don't bring it up. Like, we're not supposed to share those, but just for Joe.
My eyes only, audio listeners.
It's not a leak. I can talk about the what's inside, right? So
okay,
that's brand new 5 minutes ago. So basically, like, let me bring this up to the OWCS for NA and EMEA, right? Like the message reads, we're announcing some slight schedule adjustments for the main stage of main event of stage two in OWCS and NA and EMEA. Our goal for these changes is to get to show more of our games on broadcast and catch all the action. Please see the change log below for our changes which are reflected here. And then they've adjusted several schedules from day 1 to 4 to just show a little bit more of the matches. So that's a great adjustment. Once again, quick iteration, and also responding to the feedback by the community that it is kind of a shame that OWCSNA and EMEA just show less matches. I will say I haven't looked at this with a critical eye. It could be framed weirdly. I just don't assume it is. So if that's indeed more matches being played and no more matches being broadcast, or not played, but broadcast,
yeah,
then that's awesome, right?
Yeah. I think that, like, having... Now, am I correct in saying or reading that this is more for the... Not the group stage, but the like the main event. Yeah, I can never remember what we're calling it these days. Mm-hmm. This is more for the main event, that there will be more broadcast days for the main event. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Yeah, that's good news. I think my suspicion then, the thing I worry about in between the lines here is I hope the broadcast talent is being compensated for the added workload, because it would not shock me for Blizzard to be like, so, hey guys, thanks for this all hands meeting. Thanks for coming in on short notice. What we're going to be doing is we're actually going to be adding more to your workload and paying you the exact same amount. So I'm so glad you guys signed those agreements ahead of time. Isn't that so wonderful? Like, I hope they're compensating the broadcast talent. I don't know. This is obviously very news. This is very new. I would certainly... I wonder. I do wonder if that is the case. I'm speculating. That is pure speculation on my behalf, but I'm hoping that that's the case. If that is, then this is a win-win. Everybody, this is great. We need more broadcast days. We want more matches to be seen, especially in the main event, because let's face it, I think it's safe to speak for the both of us, where it's just like, I could not care any less when it comes to the main event, or the group stage, rather. The main event is the only thing I really care about. Like, I don't really, I'm not going to sit here and watch every qualifying group like we did last week. We'll probably gloss over some of the results of some of those games, but I'm not going to sit there and fine tooth, you know, Twisted Minds dunking on the top 500 master stack that, you know, squeaked through in like ninth place. Like, I just can't be bothered. I'm sorry. But yeah, hopefully this is just all good news. Question mark. I don't know. Is there anything there that like worries you outside of like the
I just talent? Can't like currently I do not have the ability to really look what they actually added, how many more matches okay. are.
Sure.
Or
sure
if
sure,
they
sure.
cut anything anywhere else, right? Like broadcast talents day rates probably are set, but maybe they're extending. I'm not sure. I'm already kind of surprised that we're getting some of those previously non-booked guys that already said like we're no longer in like Custer and whatnot on it, so yeah. That's great. I think I would have to look at it with a critical eye. I think just hip shooting that information without
sure,
looking at
it's not yeah
even though I will treat that right now, but yeah, I think more broadcasts can only be good. I it's hard to that's just dumb. Like hip shoot constructive criticism, if there was any.
I get that. I feel that. Yeah. To kind of quickly circle back to the World Esports World Cup discussion, you kind of had. Am I wrong in saying that there was maybe a little bit of a take brewing when it came to the Chinese side of things, that they're getting an automatic invite? There, it seems to be, you know, that there was probably some communication or some foot traffic done by the Faceit admins, or, you know, the administration for the World Cup, to reach out to some of the top Chinese players and make sure that they're, you know, going to be interested in competing and make sure that that spot would be utilized. Am I wrong in kind of sussing that out? Like, was there a little bit more to like the Chinese invite that we haven't necessarily gone into just yet?
No, I don't think. I mean, I'm interested how China is going to be handled going forward.
Oh, for
in
sure.
WCS, yeah. Right? And I'm trying to find out what's going on there. I'm sure that some indication was given to Chinese teams to in some way. I assume a large part why Leafs team, for instance, remained ready was because of Esports World Cup, but mm-hmm. otherwise, yeah, it's hard to tell.
No, 100%. I hear that. It is a good sign. I'm glad that, you know, the deal with NetEase is being, you know, pushed through. I don't want to say expedited because I genuinely have no idea how quickly that's going to get, you know, passed along. I know that from my understanding, at the very least, it's like a government check, and that could take a while, but there again, it's already been checked before, so is this just like a stamp that needs to be hit and notarized? Who knows? I can't comment. But it's good news, right? It's a good sign. It's another region that can add to viewership and, you know, again, propagate fandom to hopefully have Overwatch esports become a little bit more evergreen, right? All good things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it also just felt a little... Like, I understood that NA friends were kind of jealous of WDG, right? That they broadcasted all those matches and they were all LAN and, like, all of that. That's just, it felt better. It sounds like the broadcast, tried and true broadcast talent from the Overwatch League, right?
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, that's the beauty, you know, of third-party tournament organizers kind of competing and also taking on some criticism from the community, that we're seeing relatively quick improvements, right? In
yeah.
that. And there are more things to make improvements on, but yeah, it's not bad that this is happening, for sure.
No, not at all. I think it's definitely for the best. For the best, we need China back. I think we talked about it last show about how important that was to viewership, and it's always been a big viewership driver, so. Love to see it. Love to see it. Last but not least, a new season ventures out, but will not be usable until after Dallas. Am I remembering that right?
Correct. That's another thing that we found out is that Venture will not be activated or eligible for play before Dallas, right? And
yeah.
The reasoning being, like, of course, like, competitive integrity to some degree. I will also say maybe there's more at play than competitive integrity. It could also just be that you want, you know, your LAN event to have the new hero and therefore feel a little fresher, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't hate the decision. I think, like, from what I could gather from teams, they don't expect it to be a particularly, you know, meta hero, but you never know. Before it hits scrims, you never know.
That's true. That's true. It is. I think there was at least one prominent coach that I think I saw tweeted out that they thought that it could be if on the patch that they were scrimming, if Venture was enabled, that the meta comp would be something like Venture, Cassidy, Lucio, Kiriko.
Interesting.
And I don't remember the tank. It was something in Discord that I saw that I was just like, oh, interesting. I don't know how I agree with that, but I also don't really have too many meta opinions these days. But that being said, that is something to note. But should we quickly get into some results in Skedaddle?
Sure.
All right, beautiful. We'll start in EMEA. How did you say that the kids were saying EMEA?
Yeah. So what is it with you and, like, trying to find the proper pronunciation for double vowels? That shit kills you, doesn't it? De Imperio?
Oh, yeah. I don't...
Yeah. Joe was tilted. He was like, "What? Diversity, inclusivity, and inclusion? What?"
No, D'Impero, I think my the brain that scrambles the words. What is that called?
I mispronounced it just now. Crazy. It's fucking okay. We're both cooked.
What am I thinking of?
You're right.
Eric, help me. What am I thinking of? The brain, the when your brain do the scrambling of the words and then you say it funny. Dyslexia. There we go. Okay. my dyslexia kicked in giga hard last week and even prior to the show.
That's a beautiful description by dyslexia. Holy shit. Me when my brain makes scrambled eggs, dyslexia. Like, come on, mate.
Hey, listen, I work in mysterious ways, you know.
Beautiful.
What can I say?
Beautiful.
But yes, starting in EMEA, space station making it out of Group A, shocking absolutely nobody, not dropping a map. I think the surprise is that Super Shy is actually doing quite well, which is. I think the only name here that I remember is Sobek, and I don't even know why I know that name. Is it mythology related? Maybe. But the fact that they took EXO to game 5 is not only impressive, but like, you know, kind of a statement.
And they have to do the tiebreaker.
Yep. They have to do it all over again. In the decider match, so that is set to be played in a couple days. So definitely stay tuned there because it would be quite crazy.
Wait,
to see EXO eliminated.
Why is EXO playing Spy again instead of playing? They never played Schmungus, right? Oh, that's kind of weird. Huh.
Yeah,
GSL Schmungus,
it's GSL.
Yeah,
groups, yeah.
GSL group. Yeah, yeah. Hmm.
They would never have to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind
of a little luck of the draw there, but
I just like would think that GSL groups would favor direct comparison over you know, not force a rematch, but oh, whatever.
Yeah,
fair enough.
But yeah, Group A, it turned out to be a little bit more interesting. I think that's like kind of the story with EMEA in general, is that it was a little bit more interesting than I think people were ready for. Shocking that it's the more interesting region, because even in Group B, Ents getting taken to map 5 against Team Peps, which
that
is
was
pretty surprising.
Yeah,
that's not a result that I thought was ever gonna happen. I thought Ents is, you know, one of those powerhouse teams that should be on the caliber of Space Station, and I don't think Team Peps are, you know, shams or, you know, frauds by any means, but It's been a little rough for them as of late, and that's a good showing. That's a really good showing, especially going into the main event. More broadcast days, more eyes on the team. That's all good things.
Rumor has it that Gumba took a Finnish player behind the barn and shot it for, you know, emotional regulation after that match. It's just not something that should be played this close, right?
100%. Yeah, you can't. That's not something that is going to instill a lot of confidence. But I don't foresee that being a problem for too terribly long. But it is funny that Gunba is becoming some sort of like fascist leader that has to instill morale by having nobody surrender and just, you know, instilling a capital punishment of sorts. It's this metaphor of this colorful little title or mantle that he wears is just growing day by day. Group C, shocking nobody, Twisted Minds, and a bunch of red teams. I hate that I have to say that, but I know next to nothing about them.
Yeah,
it's not anything teams. Personal. The red teams, man. You got the blue teams with hyperlinks and red teams that I don't know about. So there you go. D'Impero, I keep getting your name wrong. So shout out to you guys. In Group D, Peace and Love, which was formerly, I think, Team Abhik. I think a a slept on EMEA flex support leading the group. Love to see it. Love to see. I think he was collegiate before. Is that why I know that name? Yeah, it was Wisp. Yes, yes, yes. I remember this. Yeah, they were quite good during the Pro-Am. So excited to see them do well. Yeah, any interesting other little takeaways here? Did you catch any of these games? I would guess not, but
I did not. I did watch Ents Peps, actually.
Oh, okay. What did you think?
Bit of
anything
a shit show.
Oh, okay, love that.
I think arguably both teams did not play to their full strength
potential. Okay.
And honestly, it's really only by the power of Christ, Kevster, that Ents pulled this through, right? Like it was like one man show for a lot of the
That's concerning.
Maybe a little.
It's concerning because how do I put it? Like, I know that the discourse at the end of the main event for last stage was like, oh, Gunba through, he can't coach, yada yada yada. I don't necessarily totally buy into like all of that discourse because I agree with I think both his stance and Chris's stance that like there was a lot more going on there than I think the public realizes, and that's typically, you know, always the case. But I do think there is something to the like Occam's razor idea that like you have such a talented player, like why not try to give them the ball if something isn't working? I think the only criticism that I would levy against Gunba is that the adaptation didn't come quickly enough to get Kevster on a playmaking role and really allow him to kind of cook. And I hate that that is the case, but when you're kind of caught with your pants down a little bit, and who was it, Twisted Minds was just like running stuff that like you had no idea, like weren't prepared for at all, like you kind of have to be a little bit more agile. I think that's my only criticism. I mean, this is again a world championship head coach that, you know, I in one instance celebrated, you know, the creativity of. So that was my only like weird point. And to hear that that's still kind of, it's not the same issue, but it's still very like, if Kev not shoot everybody, we know when. Like, that's a little concerning to me. I haven't seen the game. Maybe I should take a glance at it before I give too deep of an opinion. But I think that's always going to kind of... Is that the kind of the blessing and the curse of having, like, a superstar? Is, like, you kind of always have a default, but it shouldn't always have to be that default. You know what I mean? Like, is there, like, a catch-22 there that maybe I'm kind of getting caught up in?
Yeah, playing with a superstar inherently for everyone else on your team is really like driving, like learning to bike with like training wheels.
Yeah,
in many ways, right? Like you never really have to. So,
if it's subconscious, you know.
Yeah,
it doesn't necessarily always have to be the case. But if you can just have Kevster like get off Sim and go play Tracer, and you have a 30% increased teamfight win chance, then why wouldn't you, you know?
Yeah.
And that already kind of like stymies how you progress through the meta and how you get your, you know, how you can practice, you know? Because again, lo and behold, guys, when you devote like scuttle a multi-million dollar esports league, practice devolves a little bit. I would imagine, I don't know, I'm guesstimating here that practice is going back to the idea that like we have to win scrims.
Right.
And that's not necessarily the best, but it's what we got. So,
yeah.
Oh, you know, what can you do? It is kind of a dog eat dog world out there, so you gotta do what you can.
Mm-hmm.
So North America, yeah? Yeah, the most boring region. Period. The end.
True.
Vanilla nothing...
as fuck. Way too few good teams. All of them tossed into different groups. Snooze yeah. fest.
Big snooze fest. Just nothing all that interested. I think, you know, I'll start reverse order. Students of the game, former Isle talent, not dropping a map. Shocking. Bunch of red teams. We'll see how they look as the week progresses. I will say the fact that M80 is dropping maps is a little strange. Oh, is that a little weird to you?
Dropping maps, maybe not. I don't know.
I mean... I would imagine, like, I feel like I would have caught this, but I'll leave it open. Like, Happy and Pelican are playing on Ping, yeah?
I'm not sure if they've
traveled yet, but they are going to.
Yeah, I would hope that kind of irons itself out, because I feel like a team of that caliber, again, a team of the caliber of Happy Pelican, Hawk, Liar, Violet, that probably should be one of these 6-0 groups, you know? Like, Pirates in Pajamas is not, you know, bad by any means. You know, I've got some names like Zolik, Magic Maple, Taejong. Like, these are names that, like, I've you know, clocked before. Not bad players by any means, but, you know, are they the same caliber as, like, owl title or owl stage title competitors? Probably not, right? That's a little weird. I will say, I think from Group B, it's interesting the fact that Luminosity is the team to really be, like, leading the rhythm of that group and not Timeless. I think this is a big, if memory serves, I just fact check myself here, that Luminosity is still partnered with Maryville.
Yeah.
Question mark. Okay. Still a thing. I think that's a big win for the collegiate scene, that you have a team that's, like, competing and doing extremely well at what is now like the top level. So love to see that.
I'm interested in what that might mean. Like, if that's a team that goes to Dallas, which they might.
Sure. Yeah, definitely could be.
And if they were to get an EWC slot, which they might face at League.
Yeah.
Would they attend as an American university? Would that be a problem?
I don't think it would be under the banner of Maryville. I think that would probably be more of, like, a sponsorship kind of question. Or like a logistics thing, like how is it, would that clash with, like, the collegiate schedule or their studies? You know, I don't think that it would be under the Maryville banner, at least I would imagine.
No, it would be under Luminosity, but they're still, like, students, right? They're still
I would assume
athletes of, so I'm not sure if this is a trivial one. I could see it.
I'm picking up what you're putting down. I don't know. I would imagine that wouldn't be an issue, but maybe there is some.
If
some
anything, like, it's kind of weird that other, or, like, why would other collegiate teams not compete in OWCS, given, like, how possible it is?
There definitely are. Like, I think UCI was on the boards for a hot little bit. I think they were, like, narrowly, I want to say it was UCI, I could be wrong. I think there was a couple other collegiate teams that, like, have been competing and just, like, have narrowly missed out. So I think they are. It's just they haven't broken through just yet.
Yep.
And then, like, outside of that, I think the other, like, notable names in, like, collegiate, I think they're competing on other teams? Question mark. I think, like, the collegiate teams have, like, broken up in the OWCS competitive ladder, and they're kind of playing on other, you know, stacks, while the collegiate team is just, you know, sticking to the collegiate, I guess. I don't know. I'm not entirely too sure, but I think that could be happening.
Cool.
And then, yeah, Toronto Defiant absolutely smashing their group. Shocking. Absolutely nobody. It's sad that Korea is not going in, because I would really like to watch a little Korea right now.
Yeah,
there's a hole in my heart that needs to be filled with some decent Overwatch, and I have to wait until the main event, which, do my due diligence here, starts at the end of the month, the 25th.
Mm-hmm.
This is April, yeah?
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Yeah, okay, cool. April 25th is when the EMEA stage starts, and it's the same for North America. That's pretty much it, I think. And did anything else we need to cover?
I don't think so. I think we got it.
We got everything. Anything coming down the pipeline, my friend?
Yeah, I actually, like, as I hinted in the intro, I recorded a new format with an old name, I would say. The first episode was a little, you know, bouncy, but we'll figure it out. On a relatively dry subject, but with large implications for Overwatch esports, as to we discuss a lot, like what these builds are, leagues are built for, what they're trying to aim at, what kind of improvements they want to see in the broadcast structure in order to attract most fans. So, okay.
And is that out or is that yet
no?
To be
we're here? Yeah, I still have to work over. Like I have to build new assets. Okay. Still not sure if we're just putting it out like that or if I should cut it a lot or we'll see.
Okay, beautiful. All right. Yeah, that's 340. Yeah, 340. Or not 430 yet. That'd be crazy. Yeah, that's this episode. We'll see you guys next week with more games that we're going to be getting into the main event. Trust and believe. We're going to be getting into some X's and O's, so stay tuned next week. Be safe. Love your face.
Peace.